On this episode, you will learn why self-directing has a bad reputation. We'll dive into what is self-directing, so you're aware, why you should care what it is, some major benefits we'll get into, and we'll also dive into three investments that you cannot make through your self-directing. As always, if this episode helps you or brings you value in any way, please do me a favor and share it with a friend. Thank you and enjoy the show. Welcome to Build Your Wealth Muscle, a podcast dedicated to helping fitness entrepreneurs build wealth by saving taxes and growing their money. Each episode will break down different strategies in the areas of business, tax, and retirement planning specifically for your coaching business. Disclaimer, the topics covered in this podcast are for educational purposes only. This is not advice for your specific situation. Please consult a qualified financial or tax professional before making any changes to your financial or tax situation. Now, here's your host, certified financial planner and tax advisor, Pat Darby. Welcome back to Build Your Wealth Muscle. So we're getting back on track doing weekly shows. So for those that were wondering why they weren't coming out every week, that's the reason we were fell off track a little bit with the busy season of year end. We're getting back on track now. Today, we're going to go, obviously, you clicked on it, why self-directing gets a bad reputation. So we're going to dive into what self-directing is, and maybe more importantly than what it is, why you should even care. So let me get into, well, I do the intro usually that there's two show formats, solo episodes like today, we're going to go deep. We're going to give you hopefully actionable information that is valuable. And then we also bring on guests. We haven't brought on a guest in a while, but if I can figure out how to set all this up so that I can have some cool in-person guests set up, we'll get back to doing that. But anyway, back to the show. So what is self-directing? Now, this refers to how you invest retirement accounts. Because obviously, if you have a cash or brokerage account, you can invest in whatever you like. You could buy with your cash. You could buy real estate. You could buy stocks and bonds. You could buy crypto. People understand what that's all about. I don't want to even say it's confusion, because there's a reason that you may have a perception about self-directing. And so I'll get back to why that is, but let me first explain what it is and you might understand. So self-directing, it's when you have a retirement account that can invest in any asset allowed by law. Now that's an important, not distinction, I guess emphasis, allowed by law. So that means by law, your retirement vehicle is allowed to invest in real estate, private companies, LLCs, notes, crypto, precious metals, private funds. Obviously, it can do the stock market, ETFs, bonds, fixed income ETFs, mutual funds, all the things that you're aware of. But the reason there might be a lot of misconception that you cannot do this is mainly because of the really big firms out there. Because it's a matter of them pushing that, hey, you can't do that, and leaving out in like the tiny fine print, you can't do that here. So think about self-directing like food. Like, I don't think there's too many food in America that's outright illegal. I don't know, maybe like cannibalism. I don't know what two or three things would be illegal for a restaurant to sell. But if you are at like a Morton's or any of the high-end steak places and you went in there and you asked for a taco, they're going to likely say, no, you can't have that. But what they're referring to is you can't have that here. They didn't say it's illegal to buy a taco. And so that's what happens often with this term self-directing, because you'll be at one of the major financial institutions and you'll ask them about, hey, I want to use my IRA or my 401k. I want to buy this piece of rental property, or I want to buy this rental property. And they'll say, no, you can't do that. And again, they're referring to, you can't do it there. It is legally allowed by Congress, IRS, however you want to look at it. It's legally allowed in the tax code that a retirement vehicle can buy rental real estate. So that's why it's important for you to understand that it gets a bad reputation, because the major institutions that control a lot of the financial marketing that you see have a lot of negative things to say about it. Now, The other part that gets confusing is a lot of the major institutions will use the term self-directing in a different context. So for example, I have my clients and my own money at Charles Schwab. Used to be TD, it merged with Schwab. So now all my clients are and myself are all at Schwab. Now Schwab will have the term self-directing, but in that scenario, that context, it means you are an individual investor and you are managing your own portfolio. You do not have a professional investment advisor, or in my case, investment advisor who's a certified financial planner, managing the money. So there's the institutional side where myself and all my colleagues that manage money that sit on that side of Charles Schwab. Charles Schwab, just like TD, they would have their self-directing side. And that was referencing retail clients, basically individuals who are just managing their own portfolio. But again, in that same context, you're at Charles Schwab. They only have the menu of products that are there. So again, think of it like a restaurant. You are limited to what is on that restaurant's menu. It doesn't mean because it's not on their menu that it's illegal for you to do it or to eat it. So even if you are quote unquote self-directing at Schwab, you are still at Schwab where you have a limitation on the assets that you can purchase based on the menu they provide, which is stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, things like that. So why do you even care about this? That's probably the biggest question that I want to impress upon you to ask yourself. And the reason is essentially twofold. There's three reasons I have here, but it's really the top two. One, it's going to prevent you from a big tax hit or big tax mistake, because I've seen people where they'll be like, oh, I want to do this investment opportunity. Like maybe someone has an amazing opportunity for you in real estate and you want to get involved. And if you don't know about self-directing, you might have $1 million IRA and you need, let's just for hypothetical purposes, you need $600,000 for this investment. Well, you're going to have to liquidate that million, pay the 400 grand in taxes, and again, hypothetical. And then with your 600 grand, you make that investment in the real estate because you didn't know that you could have just taken your $1 million IRA and moved 600 grand into that investment property without paying any tax. And if you end up selling that property 5 years later, for example, all those profits are tax-free going back into your IRA. So that's one of the biggest things I want to impress upon you. Like it could be the same thing. You might have a friend who owns a restaurant or has a fitness business or whatever the case may be, and they need to bring on partners. They need someone to basically be a cash partner in their business. So maybe like this was big post-COVID, you know, especially in the restaurant business where people were hurting financially. So they might have at that time been running the business 100% by themselves, and that maybe they're your friend, your neighbor, fellow entrepreneur. Say, hey, you know, for 250 grand, you can have 50% of this business. Like I really need a cash investor. I don't need a day-to-day guy or girl. I just needed a cash investor. Again, in that hypothetical scenario, you might say, okay, well, I got to liquidate $400,000. So then I'll pay the tax of like 100, 150. Then I can give my friend 250 and now I'll own 25%, 50%, whatever you guys negotiate. Again, now that in that hypothetical scenario, you just incurred six figures of tax that you may not have needed to. And again, depending on your age, if you're listening to this, you're probably on the younger side. You're most likely under 59 and a half. You're going to pay all those taxes plus the 10% penalty. So it can be very expensive when you're making these mistakes. I've seen the same thing in the insurance world where they want to get people hooked on the infinite banking idea, like using an IUL, which is the Indexed Universal Life, build up this cash value, you can borrow from a cash free. Cool. But, and I have strong opinions on that, and I'm not saying that it's all bad, but what I am trying to emphasize is that you don't want to go out and liquidate an IRA paying taxes and penalties to set up infinite banking so that you can be a real estate investor. You could just cut out the insurance middleman and be a real estate investor inside of your retirement vehicle. So that's the one main thing. Again, like there's when I talk to younger people who don't want their money locked up in retirement vehicles, I pivot the conversation to, okay, you don't want the lockup of 30, 40, 50 years, depending on their age. I get that. That can be annoying. 59 and a half is far away for some people. But the question is, what do you want to do with the money? Like, if you wanted to pull out 20 grand and go to Bali for 6 months, yeah, then an IRA or retirement vehicle, that's going to hold you back. But if you're entrepreneurial and you're looking to make investments with your money, you want to put your money to work, chances are what you're considering doing, you can do with your retirement vehicle. And after the next couple points, I'm going to go into what you cannot do. There's only three things you cannot do. But again, why you should care. Here's probably the biggest reason. The IRS or the government, I don't know who gave it this name, they have a term called mega IRAs. That is them, that for them, that classification means an IRA worth more than $5 million. Now, what's interesting is the vast majority, I think as of 2019, there's like 29,000 mega IRAs. Now, there's like loopholes called the mega backdoor and the mega, backdoor. I'm not referring to those. Those are loopholes and strategies. The mega IRA is a value. And so again, the IRS, government, whoever, they call it, if it's worth more than $5 million, it's a mega IRA. Now, not surprisingly, when this got big headline news with Peter Thiel, because Peter Thiel's IRA, his Roth IRA, he invested in Facebook. 500 grand in Facebook at this, when he was a seed investor, and whatever it's worth now. I don't know if he sold any, but it's probably worth $6 billion or more at this point. But the Democrats were pretty pissed off about this, saying, hey, like, how dare all these mega IRAs exist? And, you know, they wanted to make sort of rules about that and whatnot. But regardless, the point is the vast majority of these mega IRAs are self-directed. Because you can think about it. If your people are building their real estate empire, if people are buying private stakes in companies that become the next Facebook, the next Google, you know, if you're a venture capitalist and you're plunking down $50,000 from your Roth IRA instead of from your cash, you know, if those companies go from $1 to $1,000, your growth is tax-free. And so the last point, which may not resonate as well with people, the advantage of self-directing is that you get to do what you are most comfortable with. So again, I use Alex Hormozi as this example because he's young and super successful. And a lot of people that might listen to me probably listen to him. And I would listen to him more than me if I were you. But when it comes to the tax side, like for example, Alex, he spoke about on his podcast that he doesn't do a lot of investments anymore. And I think he even said recently he doesn't do any investments other than what he has at acquisition.com with his family office, because he's identified for him, he's excellent at identifying companies and growing companies. So for him to invest in a company, and again, I'm not trying to put words in his mouth, but from what I observe, it's low risk for him because he knows what he's doing and he's very comfortable. That's the same way Warren Buffett. He would get outsized returns over long durations of time because for him, he had such expertise, the risk level was lower. And so that's what's cool about self-directing is that you can pick something that is your specialty, where for you, it's lower risk, higher return because you know what you're doing compared to somebody else stepping into the exact same investment is extremely risky. And the example, I think I even used this on the last time I did this episode. I recorded this first time, April 27th of 2022, episode 31. And obviously I'm trying to revamp a lot of these episodes since it's been a while, new listeners. But what was really cool is I was at a self-directing event, learning all the tools and networking. And there was a guy there who was, I think he had a few million bucks in his retirement account. He was retired. He was there at the event to learn how he can purchase a private plane with his IRA, and then he would charter it out. He's a retired pilot. He actually knew the plane. he knew the certification. He told me there was like some certification that this plane already had, which I guess was like hard to get or something like that. He knew the owners of the plane, and the only reason they were selling was because they upgraded to something bigger and more luxurious. So they needed to sell this to get it off their balance sheet. So for him, that was a pretty low risk investment. He just needed to know like the rules on how you do it and whatnot. But for him, that is a very low risk, high return investment. Whereas for me, I don't know anything about planes. That would be extremely risky. But he could potentially, again, I don't know how it turned out for him, but he could potentially make very high rate of return on that investment with, for him, a lower amount of risk. Whereas if you're stuck with the menu that some of the large financial institutions provide you with, those specific asset classes might be high risk to you because of your lack of expertise or whatever the case may be, or lack of comfort level, whatever. The point is, self-directing potentially could allow you to stay in your lane, do one thing extremely well, and get much higher rate of returns than the average investor if you're going to compare it to like the S&P 500. Yeah, and this isn't investment advice. It's just letting you know that you have the opportunity with self-directing to emphasize your skill sets. And as you're an entrepreneur, you're probably identifying certain areas where you do extremely well. So the question you have to ask yourself is, could my Roth IRA do the next investment instead of me personally? That's the purpose of today. So now let's get into, now that maybe I've piqued your curiosity, maybe the gears are turning of like certain things that you've looked at personally. And if you're doing it already personally, maybe the next time you make that investment, you use your IRA or your Roth IRA or your solo 401k. Again, that's the type of interest I'm hoping to spark. Again, go back to your investment advisor. If they're telling you you can't do this, you know, now you have more education to say, look, I know I can do it. I want to do this or I want that. Like you can help me do it or not. Again, like there's advisors like myself that will help you do it, but I want you to get the education so that if someone tells you no, you know where they're coming from. It's not necessarily not allowed. It's not allowed here. And depending on where you work, if you work with some of the big brokerage firms, there's a term called selling away. And that's in their employment contract that they are not allowed to sell away from the firm. Meaning if you've got $1 million with them and it's in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, again, they're charging you AUM, they're making money, and you come to them saying, I want to buy an $800,000 rental property. They can't, depending on their employment contract, if it's a brokerage firm, they may not be allowed to help you facilitate that because they would be working against their employer for $800,000 to leave the firm. So that's the annoying, shitty part about finance is that there's all these rules that are to protect the investor, but there's like conflicting rules that I don't want to say they harm the investor, but kinda. Like some of these firms don't have to have the legal fiduciary requirement that firms like mine do have to have. And that's because I'm an independent investment advisory firm. And some of the bigger firms are called brokerage firms, and they actually have a different legal requirement of the fiduciary. So anyway, that's just more tools because you might be working with someone and they're a great person and you're maybe scratching your head why you're getting resistance because they're ethical. You've been with them a while. You love them. They may not be allowed to help you the way you would like to be helped. So just keep that in mind. Maybe you can have an offline conversation with them. All right. So let's go into some of the details of like what you cannot do. Now, this is a very small list. What you cannot do with self-directing with an IRA. The first one is collectibles. So no fine wine, no fine art, no collectible vehicles, stamps, all that stuff. Those you can't do. The second one is anything life insurance related. That's just a rule of life insurance. You can't do life insurance. So your IRA cannot invest in life insurance. And the last one is S-corps. And that's an S-corp rule. That's not an IRA rule. The last two were IRA rules. The S-corp is an S-corp rule because the only owners of an S-corp can be essentially human beings who are U.S. citizens. So in that scenario, let's say you were listening to this and saying, oh, wow, I would love to invest in my friend's company. Like, I have this expertise. He has that expertise. He needs my cash, but he's an S corp. That's okay. You can do a restructuring. So you can't invest into an S corp, but if that's the scenario, your friend that you would let them know, well, you can't be an S corp. You got to revoke that S election, turn it into a partnership, and then my money, my IRA ownership can come in. It can't as it sits in this structure, but it's doable. A lawyer and a tax advisor can tag team and get that all squared away for you. That's not a problem. But as the rule sits, those are the three things. You can't go into an S corp and acquire ownership through your IRA. Again, that's the S corp thing. The S corp can't have a shareholder who is an IRA or a 401k, things like that. So now there's some prohibited rules. So again, this is where self-directing gets annoying because there's a lot of rules. And this is potentially, I'm trying to think how to put this. This is where your financial advisor is going to successfully talk you out of this because there are a lot of rules. But once you understand them, because they're not that complicated, but once you understand the rules, then it gets very simple. So basically, the way to look at these rules are, it's more about who you can't work with, not what you can't do. So for example, I've already said your IRA can buy rental real estate, but you're limited by who you can buy that rental property from. Here's a perfect example. Your mom has a rental property and you want to buy from her. You cannot deal with Linear Family. You might have a rental property or a primary residence that you want to buy and put into a Roth IRA. You cannot, because you're buying from yourself. So there's people that you can't do business with. And again, so the people who are excluded from that, which for some reason, siblings you could buy from, parents, kids, you cannot. Mother-in-law, father-in-law, you can buy from or sell to, no problem. Again, siblings and in-laws are no problem. But the rest of the family, you're off limits. So again, like if you have a parent who's trying to sell something, you can't buy it with your IRA. So that's what we're referring to with some of these prohibitive rules, where it's really just who you can't do the deal with, not the type. So that's why if your financial advisor is trying to talk you out of it, just don't try to do deals with. The other thing is you can't benefit from the ownership. It's called a self-dealing. So this one is probably the hardest for a lot of people to wrap their head around, but you can't benefit from it. So the best, there's a few good examples. You couldn't buy a rental property with your Roth IRA and Airbnb it, and then when it's vacant, you and your family go there. Like if you bought a rental property and you Airbnb it at the shore or the beach or whatever, and you had a regular property that you bought with cash, not with any retirement vehicle, yeah, like no one would care. You go there and, you know, no one's using it. You go use it. Make sure your accountant knows. They might have to back out some things as personal use, whatever, but it's no big deal. You cannot do that with IRAs. It's self-dealing. You're benefiting from the property. And what if you said, oh, well, I'll just pay fair market rate? You can't do that either. You can't benefit. So like if your company, for example, that you work for, let's say you have a W-2 job, and you wanted to get stock options, for example, or even better, like there might be a situation where you're getting a preferential deal for something if you're going to go do the work, then you can't do that because your labor is benefiting. So that's another rule. So again, that one gets complicated because there's a million scenarios you could be running through your head where it feels like you're benefiting. The main takeaway is, one, if you're going to do this, talk to someone who's an expert and ask them your specific situation. But think about any investment in a self-directed account as if, try to think of like the best scenario or example, but think about it just the way you would think about if you managed your own portfolio in the stock market. Like you can administratively do everything you want. Like again, if you're managing your own portfolio, administratively, you can do the research, look at the P&Ls of the companies you're buying. You can buy, you can sell. But if you're invested in Google, you're not going to Google and working there and like, now again, if you're an employee, you're such a small percentage that these rules don't apply, whatnot, but you get my point. You're not physically moving the meter. It would be the same thing with rental real estate. You cannot go and swing a hammer. So similar to what we talked about with the Airbnb, if you're going to buy a rental property, you cannot, if you're very handy and you normally fix them up yourself, you change the light bulbs, you change the plumbing, and it saves you a lot of money because you don't need to hire somebody. You can't do that because, again, your IRA is benefiting from your labor. That's a prohibited transaction rule. So again, it's just gets into who's allowed to do what, but it shouldn't, it changes the numbers potentially. Because again, if you're a landlord now and you do a lot of the labor and you don't have a management company, then it will potentially change some of the numbers for you because you would be using managers. You would have to. You couldn't go there and be your own handyman. Some other rules, IRAs, Roth IRAs, 401ks, they can have credit in that they can have, or I should say they can have leverage because you can do a loan inside of these. You could, it has to be non-recourse, which is in some ways cool because you don't have a credit check on you because there's nothing to do with you. You have a non-recourse loan. You're not personally guaranteeing it. So in that scenario, you're likely going to have, well, not likely, you will have a higher down payment. You're probably going to have to put 30 or 40% down because the lender with these non-recourse, all they can do is take the property. You personally are not on the hook. So along with that, your IRA cannot own a credit card. It can only have a debit card. So it's called an extension of credit prohibition. So that's, again, there's the amount of rules, there are more of them. But again, the purpose of this is not to make you an expert in self-directing. It's to allow you to start the wheels moving of like, I've got all these retirement vehicles. How do I put them to work? If I don't like, or I shouldn't say if you don't like the stocks and bonds, I should more frame it. If you like something else and you're itching to maybe not use a retirement account or liquidating one you have because you want to get into real estate or you want to do notes or whatever the case may be, if that's your thing and you're good at it and you're all tapped out with your cash, then if you're tempted to liquidate your IRA, then this is another alternative for you to consider. The last thing I'll get into is what some of the cool things about it, but just again, they're more prohibitive rules. When you get into these deals, you can partner with yourself. So again, this is where it gets potentially confusing is because I can't buy a piece of real estate that I own, meaning my Roth IRA can't buy a piece of property that I personally own. That's prohibited. But if I had my Roth IRA and my traditional IRA and combined they have enough money to make the purchase, I can do that because the two IRAs can come in together and form a partnership. Because they didn't do business with each other. They did business simultaneously with that third-party property. Now, once the acquisition is complete, and let's say in hypothetical terms, the Roth owns 50% and the traditional owns 50%, those two percentages can never change. Because let's say hypothetically, the Roth has $1 million in it, and the IRA has 600 grand in it, and each of them contributed 600 grand in that scenario. So then the traditional IRA is tapped out and the Roth has another 400K of cash. Now let's say it was a rental property and the roof blows off in a storm, I don't know. And it needs $100,000 worth of repairs, just hypothetically. That would be a major problem because if the Roth gives it 100 grand, it's not 50-50 anymore. And so it would change the structure, which would create a disqualified party, or basically would cause another prohibited transaction. So that puts you in a bind. You have to think about massive cash reserves because in that scenario, the entity, the partnership would need to take out a loan that would be 50-50, the same amount, or that 100K would need to come from a third party, an unrelated third party, because my IRA, my Roth IRA cannot come to the rescue and then change the percentages. So that can get tricky. So again, if you're considering doing this, because there's so many rules that is laid out for you, I don't want you to get discouraged. I just want you to understand that if you're going to get into this, I would start with something simple, because you can add all these cool partnerships. You can have your spouse, your kids, you can all go in again at the same time. You can all go in together, but then you're locked. So if you're going to do it, I would recommend, well, one, speak with someone who's an expert on this so you can flush out these scenarios and really understand all the benefits and downsides. But I would probably recommend in the beginning, do something with just one account. So you don't have these complicated scenarios where if you're going to, like, maybe if you have $1 million in IRAs, maybe you only buy a property that's, you know, a fraction of that million, so that God forbid something happens and there's cash crisis, you can, your own cash can come save the day. That's what I recommend. But again, I want, the main purpose here is for you to fully understand that what you want to invest in with your retirement vehicles is, I don't want to say limitless, but in many instances, it's much more vast than you might realize. And it might be the reason you're not doing your retirement vehicles, because you're young and don't want this money on the sidelines when you're doing cool stuff with your cash. Now, again, if you're going to go buy cool cars and not even that, like, you could buy a luxury vehicle with your retirement vehicle, or sorry, with your retirement account, but you'd have to turn it into a business. You couldn't use it personally. You could put it on Toro or any of these things. But again, you could not ever use the vehicle personally. So, but you should want to be creative with this, because part of building wealth is making sure you're growing it as tax efficiently as possible. So if you are sitting here with all these Roth dollars or all these traditional dollars, and you're saying, well, geez, this sounds awesome, but I don't have enough in my Roth. Depending on where your business is right now, maybe you're not hitting the top tax brackets. You could start doing conversions. And these are the types of cool things you could do. We all want to be like Peter Thiel and find a way to turn 500 grand into like $5 or $6 billion, totally tax-free growth. So hopefully it's got the gears turning. If you have questions about this, let me know. I geek out on this stuff, and that's the way my firm is set up. You know, we work with business owners, so I understand that not everyone wants to, like, funnel every single dollar into the stock market. Like, they want to do things that they have in their own toolkit of skills. So again, hopefully this is helpful. As always, reach out to me. I'm most active on Instagram, or obviously you can email me. All the contact information is in the show notes. All right, guys, have a great week. Thank you for joining us this week on Build Your Wealth Muscle. The links mentioned in this episode are available in the show notes. For video clips and more information on tax and retirement strategies for fitness entrepreneurs, please follow my Instagram @ThePatDarby. If you found value in this episode, please do us a favor and share with a friend. If you tag me, that'd be appreciated also. Lastly, for help implementing any of the topics discussed, please book a call. The link is also in the show notes. Thank you again for listening, and have a great day.